going to call to order the regular meeting of the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, November 16th, 2015. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the 129 victims that died at the brutal hands of terrorists in Paris? Thank you. Tonight's flag salute, which is what we often do, is include the youth in our meetings, is going to be led by Abigail Abuna. Abigail is 11 years old and a sixth grade student at Grover Beach Elementary School. She likes learning new things and seeing her friends at school. She enjoys living on the Central Coast because of the warm weather. Abigail would like to learn different languages in high school and become a teacher when she finishes her education. She likes to dance, teach, act, and being a leader. I understand that Abigail had come before us previously when she was in the third grade, so that's fantastic. And I believe tonight she's accompanied by principal, mom. Oh, people are hiding. Who's here with you tonight, Abigail?
My mom, my dad, my grandma, my aunt, my uncle, and my sister.
Now that's family support. Thank you. Well, family, please don't be shy. Come and take a photo. So, Abigail, whenever you're ready.
Put your right hand over your heart. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And that was very well done, young lady. You are going to definitely be a leader. So, when if you come over here, I'm going to give you a certificate for leading us again in the pledge. And let's take a photo. Take a picture. Get her. All right, you must stand in front of everyone. We'll take another photo. They can see me over here. You're good. Thank you, Abigail. Here's some more. School supplies, so I want to shake everyone's hands so we can say thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks for coming back.
She's going easy peasy. This is easy. Always a great way to start the meetings. Okay, Donna, when you're ready, roll call, please.
Oh, here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements?
Monday, November the 2nd, 2015, the council met in closed session regarding a conference with labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. Represented employees groups were the SEIU Service Employees International Union Local 620 and Grover Beach Police Officers Association. A conference with labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code 54957.6 related to unrepresented employee group management and confidential employees. And a conference with real property negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. City Council reconvened and opened the session and announced that there were no reportable actions taken during that closed session.
Thank you, City Attorney. Let's move to our agenda review. This is where the council will review the agenda as presented by staff and decide if we want to make any changes to that agenda. Do any members of the staff or of the council want to change the agenda?
No.
Okay. If there are no changes, I'll accept a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we are going to proceed with council business as on the agenda that is presented. I believe there are extra copies, or there typically are extra copies at the table at the back of the room. So let's move forward. We don't have any ceremonial calendar items tonight, so we will move into public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes. total any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. So this is your opportunity to speak on any item that is not on the agenda. I think I have one speaker request form. Is this for Mr. Weisong for the public communications?
Thanks for not sliding by me this time for that last meeting. Don A. Weisong Crockett. You know, I'm tired of coming down here, and I know you're tired of seeing me down here. But it wouldn't happen. But the chief of police back here has the reason why. 4 times I've had a plumber, and we have the most incompetent, sloppy, disorganized construction up there that I have ever seen. And I've been from Paso Robles to Ventura with all the grocery stores and been through towns of construction, even Madonna. I've had 3 guys over there from Madonna saying it's a sloppy situation. We started in July or August. No mention was said that in a meeting that we was going to put water pipelines in here in my house, in my room. Nobody said anything. Nobody said anything about digging. Then they came in and digged, cut the road. Well, I've had the plumber now 4 times. He's got the evidence. If you take a PVC pipe and throw it in a ditch, and you don't put a rag on that end or a cap on this end, and he's got the dirt gets in there. So what happens? It goes into the toilet. It goes into the water heater. It goes into anything you turn water. Now that is uncalled for in Grover Beach to have construction people, and you're an engineer, and you should have been up there checking. Greg Ray, I had called him 4 or 5 times, got him once. Then you got this $100,000 engineer. I thought he was pretty good, but boy, he threw me a curb on the sidewalks and all that crap, you know. So I called him up there. I said, I got a leak. I got problems. Well, I'll turn it into the city. You know, I don't have $128 to throw away like he and these people you do. You get a paycheck every week or every other week or whatever. I don't get that with cows and calves. I'm 82 years old, and I don't like to live here in this town, and the city council lady right across the street, no show. Couldn't tell her. She didn't. So then they said, oh, yeah, they're going to take, and I asked them to take up the pavement because it won't work if you overpay. It's like Oak Park 4 years later. But no. So what did they do? They didn't take it out. They run in a street cleaner. And they run it down there 15 times. That didn't take the old pavement up. So when you go over that old pavement, in 4 years it's going to be just like Oak Park. Just like it. And I will be here, but you call me in hell, text me down and come. But anyway, they had a street cleaner up there today. They had 2 guys look at their water meter. It's been a circus. So you know what? Your $45 million that he said was only going to be 25, her husband, that's my taxes is 49. You know, don't think any of you are qualified to sit there. If I'm 82 and I come up here to tell you and show you a piece of pipe where you need a rag, and I got a little boy here, 7 years old, that can do it with his grandfather and me, and great-grandson. Boy, that is sad to have construction workers get $25, $35, $40 an hour and don't know what to do. I told him, I said, you've got to put a plug on that. You've got to put a rag on that. That dirt is going to go into my house. And then the plumber comes and he takes a toothpick. I said, I don't want the damn toothpick picking out the dirt. I want a new. Also, I didn't have hot water Friday and Saturday a week ago. Had Sears come out. The water heater is only 3 years old. The other one went 25 years plus. Well, the new gadget now, the thermostat. So the dirt got in, and then the 2 men told me that the chloride is responsible. I told him about it. And they compared it to Mission Hills, our water and their water. I'm going to tell you again, you don't deserve to sit there and let these people get away with playing games up there. That should have been done in 1 month and not 3 months.
Thank you, John. I don't have any other speaker requests for us, but is there anyone else?
Good evening, Council. My name is Brad Snook. I'm co-chair of our county's chapter of Surf Rider Foundation. I'm thinking John will be here in 4 years, just my perspective. Some issues I often speak in front of the council have to do with water reclamation. As the community has heard me address before, the ocean outfall pipe discharges approximately 3.8 million gallons a day in Oceano. That's roughly a million gallons from Pismo and the balance from Arroyo Grande, Oceano, and Grover Beach. That means that we have an opportunity to reclaim that water and help resupply or provide a buffer to some of our water supply issues. The Water Board has a great pie chart that I'll be sending to the council then later. 2009 survey numbers showing that the reclamation, yearly reclamation, is well over 600,000 acre feet per year. And if you look at the pie chart, roughly a third of that is for agriculture, and then other industrial and many, many uses for reclaimed water. So there's a lot that you can do with it. We thought that the Pismo project was pretty close, and now to hear the Arroyo Grande City Council speak on the issue, there's some concerns that that plan at Pismo is also in a floodplain like the plan in Oceano. So there's a possibility that we might be looking at a regional plant that would take in all of the effluent of the whole region, including Pismo and the Northern Cities Management Area, of which we're a part, and then reclaim some of that so a new plant would be built at a new site. And then eventually the Oceano plant and the Pismo plant would be phased out. So here we are, very close to doing reclamation, very close to doing groundwater injection from Pismo, and it appears that the rug will be pulled out from underneath that project when we could have reclaimed maybe a quarter of a million gallons a day to help us get something done in the right direction. We have problems with conflicts of interest. I mean, we're hearing about the PG&E desalination potential from Diablo Canyon, and we have two mayors that work for PG&E here and in Arroyo Grande. And when I was in the meeting in Arroyo Grande, the mayor had to step out when they were discussing that issue. We also have a person on this board that works for the county. If we look at potential conflicts of interest, we have two different water supply issues. We have the water reclamation, and then we have this potential PG&E desal. It would be interesting to have this on the agenda for the city to discuss long-term projection, who will represent the city for both of these projects, because we're very interested in moving forward. It's very important that we address these water supply issues. Surfrider is on the side of a water reclamation only. So you'll hear from me later. I appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you, Brad. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close on public communication. And Bob, do you have an update on Mr. Wysong's situation?
Mr. Mayor, we did process a couple of the checks for the issue that he had. I will indicate, yes, there was a construction issue with linking his service line up to the meter and from there to the main line. I'll tell you that we ended up having to improve that main line because, as the council may recall, there had been a significantly larger main put in Brighton some time ago, but some of those homes hadn't been connected at that time. So it was necessary to correct that problem using the fact that we were in the streets. I understand he may still have issues. I've discussed with the public works director maybe getting an independent plumber out there to take a look at it so we can resolve it for one time and all.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Okay. So let's move on to public hearing. This is item number one on the agenda. This is a financing plan for the public improvements associated with the Grover Beach Lodge project. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. As you may know from the memo I placed on the dais, I'm actually recommending that this item be continued to the December 7th meeting. And I'm making that recommendation for a couple of different reasons. One is that the mayor and the mayor pro tem know, we will be going down as a part of the joint authority to meet with Pacifica on Friday to discuss specifically scheduling, which is a part of this report. And the second is that, as you'll see with item number six, there is a financial change in the financing recommendation that would require a rewriting of some portions of this report. So based on those facts, I am recommending it be continued till December 7th.
Okay. So, City Attorney, I know we probably have some people. Are there folks here in the audience that had come to speak to this item? If you are, can you just raise your hand for me? Excuse me?
Speaking or concerned?
Oh, if you're concerned, well, I was wondering who was going to come up to the podium and speak, but if there's a concern. So, City Attorney, I wanted to go to you, and I know folks have come here tonight. They saw this item advertised, so I know the city manager is now recommended it be continued, but I want to give people an opportunity. How would we do that, to speak? How would we do that?
It's at the council's discretion. You can hold a public hearing. You can allow the public to speak to this issue if you so desire. And then instead of taking action or any direction at the end, you could merely make a motion to continue if you'd like.
Okay. And we can do that without a full staff report? Or is it? Okay. So then why don't I see if any council members have any questions or any concerns
on the having the public weigh in this evening? Or I mean, I had a number of questions that it would probably take a full staff report to delve into, which I think would be more appropriately handled on the 7th. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear people's concerns this evening.
Okay, yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, does that mean? Okay, let's move forward. I know that there's a long agenda and people have places to go and things to do and people to see. So I think what we'll do then, let's open this up and to the public and receive any comments or concerns regarding the item before the council. So I don't have any speaker request forms, but please come forward and just state your name for the record.
Anita Shower, North 6th Street, Grover Beach. I had some issues with the financing of how you were going to do this. Also wondering why you're going to do this, so I'll wait until the next meeting.
Okay.
And give you my concerns. So will we hear from you before we make our presentation, or are we going to make our presentation first?
So when this comes back on the 7th, which is what the staff is recommending, the council hasn't decided yet, but when it comes back, there will be a full staff report
and then you'll hear questions, and then you can express concerns.
All
That's
right,
the
thank
typical.
You very much.
Okay. Is there anyone else? Okay. So, City Attorney, can I just leave the public comment period open, or shall we close it and just reopen it?
At this point, what I would recommend you do is just, if it's the desire of the council to continue the matter, and you're going to allow public participation at the next meeting, which I assume you would just make a motion at this point in time to continue the matter and leave it open.
Okay. So someone prepared to make that motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay.
Actually, one question, just for the city manager, is December 7th going to be enough time to resolve any outstanding
yes,
questions?
Yes. Certainly, depending on what kind of direction that I may get on the next item, I would be able to. The revisions aren't complicated.
Okay.
Could I make one point of discussion?
Yes.
I know we left the public comment period open, and I know no one wanted to comment, but I know for me it would be helpful to maybe know what people's concerns were so that we could work on at least addressing them, use the time to address them by December 7th or know what they were. I don't know if that encourages anyone else to come up. And I know one thing that I hope we get into by December 7th, and I know we will, but I just want to mention is one point for me is attachment 3 and all the dates on there, and knowing by December 7th and having some form of documentation along with this to show us that this will be locked down and in writing. I know for me, I would like to see that by December 7th. So that's just my discussion on it.
Okay, hold on. So now that she sparked interest,
sorry.
Just a second.
I mean, all right. It's you know, obviously the mayor's call, but I to use the time wisely, I would suggest.
Well, I mean, since you're standing, why don't you come on up? But I want anyone to understand, if you don't speak tonight, and if you speak on the 7th, and if there are issues or concerns, we will consider those, and if we have to take more time, we will. But since you're up, feel free.
I'm Robin McDonald, and I am just here because we are part of the equestrian group, and we really care a lot about the parking so we can continue to ride the horses on the beach. So that would be an issue that we would love to see addressed on the 7th.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Any other brave souls? No. We are welcoming for your comments. Come on up.
I'm not brave, but my name is Darcy Murphy, and I ride down the beach as well. And we have had quite a few accidents there where you guys have put the crossing over from the parking lot over to the dunes. One lady I know had her granddaughter on a horse, and they went down on that. Now, I understand, I don't know this for a fact, but that you have been advised of that, and it is slippery. All you have to do is to score it. That would solve the whole problem. It is, you can't go on. So what we end up doing is like going off into the plants and stuff to make it safe just to get across the street. And it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, it's dangerous. And one of my friends also said, since she won't come up here, that when you do have an accident down there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you should report it to the police so that when you guys will see that there's a problem there with horses, it is just, their feet go right out from under them. You know, and it's dangerous. You're setting yourself up for a lawsuit, in my estimation. And I'm not a lawyer. But anyway, that's one of the concerns. And the other is, like we said, the parking. A parking lot with 3 spaces or whatever, I don't know what it is, Mr. Pearl, but anyway, it's not enough. If you go down there any time, you'll see 5, 6, up to 10 to 15 rigs sometimes. 3 spaces on concrete parking lot is not going to get it. You know, it just doesn't do it. we wouldn't mind going somewhere else if you guys have a better plan. You know, I mean, we're up for it, but that's a huge concern for the equestrian people.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy.
Thank you.
Okay, so we actually have a motion. I know, point of order, but we actually have a motion and a second. And so that is to continue this item to a date specific. I think staff had talked about December 7th, and we will keep the public comment section open, so you will have another opportunity to address the council on this particular item in front of us. So with that, I'm going to all in favor.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. And we thank you all for coming down. And sometimes we move forward and then additional information comes and we have to continue an item. But we look forward to seeing you on December 7th. Okay? So let's move on to our consent agenda. Our consent agenda is where we take routine items. They're considered as a group. And tonight we have several items on consent. I believe there are four. One is the Treasurer's Report for the period of October 28th through November 10th, 2015. Another one is the Treasury Report for the Streets Bond Account for the same time period. The third is the minutes of the City Council meeting on October 5th. And then the fourth is affirming the City of Grove Investment Policies. Do any members of the Council want to pull any items from consent tonight?
I don't know if it needs to be pulled, but I had a question on five that may lead to it being pulled.
Okay, so what is your question?
Question has to do with in the investment policy itself, which I think it ends up being page 4 of the policy, which is item 3, standards of care, paragraph 3, and it's called delegation of authority. The authority to manage the investment program is granted to the city treasurer. And my question was that I'm wondering if we should consider changing that to the city manager, since the council has the budgetary authority to, and then the city manager is really the only person that we have oversight on, and then the city manager has the oversight of the rest of the city. If he then delegates that to the city treasurer, which is Ms. Chapman, then that provides a clearer direction that we can provide to the city manager. So I'm just wondering if there's a particular state law reason why it's the city treasurer, or if there's an opportunity for us to change that from to the city manager with delegated authority to the city treasurer.
Okay, so let's get an answer to your question, because I'm thinking if we can contemplate that, we need to pull this from consent.
Mr. Mayor, the investment policy was basically taken from the Government Finance Officers Association, and we basically just took the language that they recommended and put it in the form of the investment policy probably about 8 or 9 years ago. There is no reason that the authority can't be changed, most likely, but if the council wanted to go that direction, we'd recommend holding it over and getting that question answered specifically.
Okay, then I think based on staff's answer to your question, mm-hmm. I think we should probably pull this item.
Right.
Or we pull it, but then you're suggesting continuing it. So we'll pull the item from consent. Are there any other items any council members are interested in pulling from consent? Thank you, Gayla. Okay, and I don't have any speaker request forms from the public to speak on the consent agenda. So we have items 2, 3, and 4. Do any members of the council want to make a motion on this item?
Yes, I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as presented with the exception of item 5.
Okay, very good. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, so we'll give the second to Councilmember Shaw. I think she was just a little quicker. If there's no discussion on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So let's just take item 5 now. We usually put item we pull from consent at the end of the agenda, but staff is recommending that we move this to the next meeting. Would that be December 7th?
Yes.
Do any members want to make a motion on that item?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
There's a motion. There's a second. If there's no discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So that item will be brought back to the council on December 7th. We're now going to move into our regular business. This is item number 6. This is an appointment of a financial advisor, bond counsel, and placement agent, and selecting purchaser for a bank-qualified loan tax exempt to finance public improvements associated with the bond. City Manager Perrault, or yeah. Associated with the Grove Beach Lodge, I'm sorry.
Right.
City Manager Perrault.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, to a certain degree, this discussion will eventually relate back to changes that may become necessary in the finance plan, and you'll understand that as I go through the presentation. Essentially what, as the council knows, the city has taken on the responsibility for financing and constructing certain improvements associated with the lodge. The cost of those improvements are approximately $5.2 million. And what staff had initiated was the borrowing of between $3 million and $5 million as a way of assisting with the financing of the improvements. And to a certain degree, the actual borrowing amount is subject to council direction and approval. The $3 million level is tied to the potential for an HCD grant, and the $5 million is also at the discretion of the council in the event they don't want to use that grant. I will say that, based on trying to get the financing for the lodge, staff proceeded with the bringing on a finance team, which included the finance advisor, Mr. Pache, who's here with us tonight, the retention of Piper Jaffrey as the placement agent, and a bond firm of Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe. To perform services as bond counsel. Up until this point, that team has worked only on a contingent basis and is subject to final approval by the council, and that's part of the recommendation, is that they formally be retained. Their fees are dependent on the successful completion of the financing. Which, if the council wants to move forward with that, it is possible the financing could be completed as early as the end of December. In terms of the process, again, at my direction, the placement agency, Piper Jaffrey, went out and solicited bank-qualified bids. Bank-qualified bids are a special loan package that can only relate to financings that are less than $10 million. And so we scheduled the bid to be up to the $5 million cap. We received a number of bids. Those bids were reviewed with the staff and the financing team, and the bank that had proposed the best parameters for this loan was the bank of BBVA. They're a large international bank, and they're in actually 51 countries. The office that bid on this loan in particular is located in Phoenix. What they did do is they indicated an initial rate of for the loan of 3%. That rate of interest is subject to change and may do so until the rate is locked in. The rate likely wouldn't be locked in until a credit report is completed, and depending on council direction tonight, that would be the next step, And then ultimately, in terms of the process, we would return at the meeting of December 7th, and the council would authorize the documents necessary to proceed with the loan. The loan is secured by city property. Those properties are enumerated in the report and include City Hall, the police station, Trueville Center, and I believe the Corporation Yard. Because those values exceed the $5 million requested. I did want to point out in the difference that has occurred since the report has been filed is that last year in March, when the council authorized the issuance of the $5 million for the street rehabilitation project, that was also a bank qualified loan. And that loan was also put together in such a way that it also was capitalized, meaning that there were additional interest. The interest and issuance costs were over and above the $5 million. And the reason we did that was to make sure that $5 million returned to the construction fund, which was done. Bank qualified loans, a city cannot issue more than $10 million worth of bank qualified loans in a given year. And what is taken place, what is contemplated now, is that the capitalization and issuance costs of nearly $400,000 that were over and above the $5 million in March will have to be counted against the $10 million cap. So consequently, the change to this is that if the council wishes to proceed and complete the financing within this year at the $5 million level, or at the higher level, I'll say, you'd be precluded from doing that. You'd have to back the issuance cost down, back the issuance amount down to about $4.5 million, and that would leave a project fund of about $4 million. And that was somewhat different than I had anticipated in the financing report. The council has alternatives available to you. You could go ahead, and actually I would recommend at least going ahead at this point with the initial phase, largely because the interest rate is good, and if ultimately the council decides to pursue the issuance at between the $3 million level and the $4.5 million level, all of that will fit within the bank qualification level of $10 million. You're not in a position where you have to make a final decision tonight other than essentially selecting the finance team and selecting the purchaser, BBVA, to move the process forward. The process doesn't get done until all documents are presented and approved, and there's still some processing time beyond that. And that decision wouldn't be made to December 7th. The other option that the council has is you could delay the financing until next year if the council chose to do that, and then it wouldn't be subject to the $10 million cap, but you'd have to weigh that decision against what you may want to do with the street bond issue next year. You may not be able to issue all of that as a bank-qualified issue. If you were to go next year, it would mean that most likely the street issue would not be bank-qualified. It would be a bit higher in interest rate, which would have some impacts to the property owners. Essentially, as I said, for at this point, I would still recommend going forward both with the selection formalization of the financing team and with the selection of BBVA as the purchaser. That's my staff report.
Thank you, Bob. Let's see if there's any questions. Councilmember Nichols, any questions?
So none of the upfront costs for the financial team can come out of the loan monies, is that correct?
Well, the upfront costs, essentially everything they do is pretty much contingent. There may be some minor legal review costs that we may incur one way or the other, but the rest of it is all contingent on the closing.
I'm seeing $110,000 in costs listed here in the contract. So Pesci Company, $35,000 up front, Orrick Harrington, $40,000, and Piper Jaffray, $35,000.
Those are all contingent on the closing.
They are contingent.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Wright.
Thank you. I have a couple to start with. First, if we have the $2.1 million grant money, why would we want to go for a higher amount?
Well, that's a decision I think the council is yet to make. And what you would need to do, and a proper time to do that may in fact be at the time the finance plan is submitted, but you need to think about the $2.1 million and what may be associated with it. If you remember, that particular grant has a requirement of job production.
Sure, exactly, and that's another question, but that's in another item.
Right, right. So, you know, if you want to take advantage of the 2.15 loan, then yes. If you don't want to take advantage of that and want to turn the grant back for any reason, then the other financing, the
I
higher
see.
Level is still so, available.
Okay,
to
so that's why you gave us the two
right.
options. Okay,
right.
But the 2.1, to clarify, is a grant. It's not
right.
a loan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. So then my one other question is actually regarding the contract. So I imagine this would be for our city attorney. And it's the consulting services agreement with A.M. Pesce and Associates. Specifically, I'm looking at item 6, assignment, that they may assign this agreement without necessity of obtaining the consent of the issuer. So, you know, very rare, I don't think I've ever seen that in a contract, and I just find it very unusual, and so it really stood out to me. This on page 2 of the agreement for services. It's actually right behind the resolution in item 6.
Council member, I was instrumental in bringing the bond council on, but typically staff brings the FA on, and I didn't review the agreement. Having said that, it's probably in the finance world not unusual that organizations such as FAs may assign the agreement, certainly as a condition of the agreement, if you so choose. You can seek a condition in the agreement that requires the approval of the council or any delegated member like the city manager to approve that assignment if that's something you choose to do.
Okay. All right, so not sure whether or not that's customary in that industry, but I'm not familiar with FAs. I actually had to even look that up. I had to Google it.
Financial advisors.
It wasn't the financial. It was financial printer. That's what I had never heard of such a. Anyway, so okay. Well, then we can talk about that then. I guess when we deliberate.
yeah, and I think
Mr.
Pesci is here.
Okay, very swell.
May I? Yes, please come forward.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. I'm Albert Pesci. Financial advisor for the transaction, which we've been working on since about August. So, as your city attorney said, it's customary to have that clause in there. I can strike that clause if you so desire, or I can have that at the recommendation approval of the city manager. She can
I think a mutual agreement would probably be sufficient from my perspective anyway.
It's typically in the case of if my firm were to get be sold to another firm, but you always have the clause in there to where if you wanted to stop working with me, you would put, I think it's two weeks notice or 30 days notice, you know, then we could terminate the contract altogether. But if you would so desire, I'd be glad to make an amendment or change that to where it would be mutually upon mutual approval by the city manager.
Thank you.
Along those lines, and have Mr. Hale review that.
Okay. Great. Very good. Thank you.
Anything
thank
else?
I think that's it for now.
Okay. Councilmember Shaw.
I had a couple questions. I don't mean to. I know we're talking about the other issue next time, so I don't want to confuse things too much, and maybe we should just talk about this next time. But if we do choose to utilize the grant, I know that the grant requires us to expend money and then be reimbursed by the grant. But would we really need to take the entire loan in a large chunk like that and be paying all that interest, or would it make more sense to take it in pieces? And either way, whether or not, however you answer my question, can we decide on this tonight without making a decision on the amount?
Well, I think in terms of sizing, the sizing is really up to the council's discretion. I mean, you know, you have to be a little careful. I wouldn't suggest that you'd go below the $3 million that we've suggested in the past, because there's a certain if you go with a small issuer, the costs tend to get a little bit higher on a prorated basis. But the other point I was going to make is I think it really depends on ultimately how the council wants to, whether they do in fact want to match this with the grant or use the higher amount to fund the improvements separately.
Sure. And I understand we're a little up in the air right now because we're still thinking $3 million versus $5 million, and we can't decide on that at today. But it just seems like $3 million and the interest cost in $3 million is very high. When maybe I haven't utilized one of these grants, so I'm please jump in on when I'm giving you the wrong numbers. But I'm saying, what if we could expend $100,000 and take a loan of $100,000 at a time? Or is that not how it would work?
Well, let me explain a little bit, and then if the city attorney wants to add in, but I would suggest that it's 3% money. 3% money is a very good rate in the marketplace today. Commercial loans from a bank are likely to cost you more like 5. So the 3% is attractive, number one. Secondly, this is a fully capitalized for the first 3 years. So the reason that 346 for the remainder, and that's the maximum amount that you would ever pay. The average actually is a bit lower than that. The average is like 298, I believe. But the reason that the highest payment is a bit higher is because it's interest only for the first 3 years.
Okay.
Okay.
I understand 3% on $3 million is a good interest rate, but what if it ended up being 5% on $200,000? I mean, wouldn't that be less, though? I mean,
let me articulate it if I could this way.
Yeah.
functionally, you're selling this loan to a bank. Banks are going to finance to a certain degree some of that by borrowing money themselves. They'll borrow that money potentially at a tax-exempt basis to fund this particular loan. The lower in the FAA may be able to discuss this a little bit better than I, but you already have a fairly small loan amount in the context of the banking world. So as you get smaller, below the $3 million, I would agree with city manager that you probably are already at a point where you don't want to go much lower than that, or you will see interest rate components go up quite a bit.
Okay. All right. I guess one other question. I know with making this decision tonight, we can get the financing in place as early as December. What if, I know you mentioned you have a meeting coming up. What if something happens in that meeting and there are delays? If we decide this tonight, can we, I know if we delay till January 1st, we might lose our interest rate, but are there any other penalties?
And in fact, the decision or the recommendation tonight isn't tying you to anything other than the selection of the financing authority and the selection of the purchaser if you choose, if being the bank, if you choose to consummate the loan. You're not obligated at this point to do any of that until such a time as the final documents are in front of you. That'll happen in December 7th, and then you still, you know, you still have choices. Those choices would be, you know, you either continue the processing of the documents to a later date, which, yeah, you do run the risk of obviously a higher interest rate, or you could even then choose to put the financing off until after the first of the year. And there are no consequences to the city other than maybe, as I've indicated, a little bit of legal costs that we may have to pay for in terms of document review, that sort of thing.
Okay. So we're just picking our team right now.
Right. Picking the team and picking the bank is the other thing that you're doing.
Okay. And just in looking at the consulting services agreement, one point in item 5, compensation, telephone and fax costs billed at $50 a month. I just wasn't sure, you know, most long distance is free now, so I wasn't sure what that involved.
Well, there have been a lot of phone calls back and forth over the past 4 months, and that's a pretty standard charge that my firm, you know, requests to have compensated for.
Okay. So that's also for the time on the calls as well?
Yeah, it's general overhead.
Okay.
Charge.
All right. Yep, I think then that's all my questions. Thank you.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem.
So most of my questions have been asked and answered. I just have really one question is, the city has utilized all three of the consultants in past transactions. So the only new member of this team would be the BBVA group. Is that correct?
No, not exactly. The financing fiscal advisor actually selected the placement agent, Piper Jaffrey. Mm-hmm. And the bond counsel is selected by the city attorney.
But the city has utilized...
Based on recommendation.
Right. But I know we've used Piper Jaffrey in the past.
Yes.
And I think I've seen Ora Carrington and Sutcliffe as on our consultant list in the past as well. But maybe I just wanted to basically confirm these folks are familiar with the city. And they're...
Yes.
And all three of their contracts are contingent upon the close of the loan proceeds or the financial documents. And so I just want to. So really, the only new player is the BBVA group. Okay, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Similar to you all, most if not all of my questions have been asked and answered. But one thing I do want to do, and I'm glad Ms. Shower is still here. Because the more I'm thinking about this, we're talking about, we're going to continue the financing plan, but let's put a team in place today. So I do want to answer some very core information for the community. I think one of the questions that came up, Bob, is why is the council contemplating this investment?
In terms of the return?
Well, so I'll just lay it out. I think in the staff report you talked about to induce Pacifica to complete the project. They successfully competed for and won the bid to build this project. And over the time that we've been working on this project, it has changed in scale and scope, starting out with 135 rooms, single single building, which was the equivalent of a Motel 6, if you ask me, to now it's become more of a master plan for that end of Grand Avenue, and it took on more public spaces than the original had contemplated.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons why Pacific had come back and asked the city to consider contributing in this investment. The other thing is that Pacifica's investment on this lodge is going to be, what, about $34 million?
That's correct.
Okay. And then the amount that is being contemplated by the city and state is roughly $5 to $6 million or so.
That's correct.
And that can only be limited to those public improvements.
Right.
Okay. The revenues potentially generated from this project, I think you quote $755,000 annually.
That's once the project is fully operational, and that is dependent to a certain degree on the lease amount, which has a variable. It has a minimum of 120 and goes up to 235. I will say that those revenue figures were independently vetted in part by our grant application. An independent consultant reviewed those on the city's behalf and found those to be conservative. So the likelihood is those revenues will actually, once the project is up and operational and contributing, those are likely to be conservative and will grow from there.
And that's directly to the city's general fund.
Right.
That doesn't include the overall economic impact, which you seem to be estimating $11 million in the local economy.
Yes, as the council may recall, a few years ago, an independent Taussig financial consultant actually reviewed what the contributions are likely to be from a project of this type, and he actually noted that the contribution to the economy would be about $11 million per year. I know that sounds like a big number, but you have to think about it in terms of that is both the operations spending for the lodge in meeting space, as well as what the visitors will individually spend. And that will come back into the economy locally. How much of that will the city will capture will remain to be seen.
Okay. So I just wanted to put some of the base information out there as to why this is being contemplated. No decision has been made, but that's gives you a little more information. I really didn't want folks to walk away tonight to go, we made a decision to continue something, but didn't provide some base information. Jeff, did you? I thought I saw you flinch. Sorry. I'm an old basketball player, so you have good peripheral vision. So, the other thing, I think, Councilmember Bright, you asked the question, and I know we're trying to stay specific to putting a team in place, but I want to, in the spirit of true transparency, I think there's some information that appears to have come up, and there seems to be now a question as to the grant itself, as you know, comes with restrictions and requirements. And one of the things that was a direct result, I still maintain, of this federal grant was a potential change of the project, and namely the number of rooms. The design originally contemplated 150,000 rooms and a standalone. I'm sorry, 150. Wow. Woo. Then you might as well put a few more zeros on that 11 million. Sorry, everyone. 150 rooms was what was originally contemplated with a standalone conference center or facility or meeting space that was going to be anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 square feet or larger. So the federal grant, some of the advice that was given was that to reduce the size of the meeting space may make you more successful in getting the grant, and it clearly worked. So the project that is potentially the council is going to have to decide on is now 144 rooms, with 4,000 square feet of internal space with the conference center phase then later. So that's a decision that we're all going to have to make. And we've all talked to the community and described the project that had 150 rooms and the standalone conference center. So that's why not just, that's why I think that's part of the providing an alternative beyond just accepting this federal grant is basically, is there a benefit to having the larger meeting space, which seems to be, I'm receiving a lot of comments from folks in the community. And I think that's more of a discussion we need to have. And we recently had gotten information from some of our state partners that they had a very conservative interpretation of how things would go forward. And so it was raised that if Pacifica built the hotel with 144 rooms and 4,000 square feet of meeting space, that they had met the intent of the concession agreement, and there was nothing to compel them to build anything larger. So I put a lot of details out there, so that we still got to get resolution on that. I mean, we've got some folks in the state who say if you move forward incrementally and do 4,000 square feet of meeting space internal, you can always expand that out. And I think that's what was communicated to us all along, and that seems to be, we just need to get some finality on that. And if that is the state's position, that we can start with 4,000 square feet internal and then move to a larger facility, then I think that means the option with the grant looks a lot more appealing. So that's one of the things that needs to get resolved. So I think that's one of the factors for why this needs, the first part needs to be continued. So I know I'm not laser pointed on the topic in front of us, but it is related. It's information that I don't want people to think we're having this discussion in a vacuum and on an island. So there are factors and forces out there that will be discussed more fully after the meeting with Pacifica and at the meeting on December 7th. Okay?
Sounds good.
So, did anyone from the public want to speak to this issue, this item?
Thank you. Anita Schauer, North 6th Street. Mayor, are you saying that with your meeting with Pacifica, you're going to find out if this 4,000 square feet is going to double or triple, and is that going to be a separate building, and who's going to pay for that?
So what I'm saying, I'm sorry I confused you two. So we have to get confirmation from state parks as to whether we can incrementally step into meeting space. That means 4,000 square feet internal to the hotel, and then do an additional separate meeting space. That's a state call, and that's kind of something that has been contemplated in the numbers and the information that staff's been vetting.
Thank you. So if the state says that we can have an additional building with additional square feet for a conference center, which is what we all hoped we were going to get, is that something that Pacifica is going to build, or are we going to build that?
Well, it's basically still subject to negotiations, but I think that is something that would be part of some of the public funds. So that's a discussion. That's a discussion point.
Okay, so that's going to be brought up at your meeting?
That's correct.
And that meeting is when?
December 7th. We're going to have that full discussion in public.
Where would we get the money to do that extra building?
Well, that's kind of what we're also going to talk about on the finance plan that is going to be discussed on December 7th.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else? Okay. So I'm going to close it. I'm going to bring it back to the council. So I just wanted to provide that information, like I said. The more I thought about it, I think it was better to get more information out there than less. This item before us is actually, as the city manager has said, is really to appoint the finance team that will move forward with the documentation. Bob, is there anything else that I missed on that, the item that's before us?
Just that you're also selecting the purchaser, the bank, in the event you want to complete the transaction.
Okay. So So at this point, is there any other discussion, or is someone prepared to make a motion on this item? And I know that, Karen, you had an amendment you might suggest.
Yes.
So you want to make a motion?
I will, if you're good with it.
You have the floor.
I'll give it a go then. Okay. I make a motion that we adopt the resolution appointing the financing team and selecting a loan purchaser with a modification to the consultant agreement? I can't remember calling it. Yes, a consultant services agreement. Item 6, assignment, that it's with the mutual agreement, or I guess we can let staff figure that out. But
okay, so mutual agreement approved by?
Between the two parties,
with
yeah.
City manager?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I'll go ahead and second
I'll
that.
I'll second.
All right, you're going to second? Let's Mayor Pro Tem seconds that. If there's no, is there any more discussion? Okay, very good.
My only discussion point would be that I think it's good to kind of lock our team in place, and so with whatever decision we make on the 7th, there's an immediate opportunity
right.
to put the plan in place.
Okay, very good.
I just want to make sure, and I know it will be, but all of the contracts have the wrong date, and I just want to make sure they're all updated. I don't want to pay for an extra month or two.
No.
That's all.
So staff will take care of that grammatical error. It's plural. Okay. Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you, Donna. Motion carries. So let's move to item number 7. This is the status report on the proposed revisions to requirements for special events and outdoor assemblies. And Police Chief Peters, and it looks like Park and Rec Program Director Petker. Are you guys going to tag team this report?
Sure.
Chief, you have the floor.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, members of the council, we bring the update to the special events ordinance changes and amendments to before you tonight. And just give you a little bit of background, is earlier this year, back in April, you gave some direction to staff to work on combining the ordinances, specifically the ordinances involving the parade and activities on the streets, as well as the special events ordinance, as well as looking at how to possibly incorporate the parks and beautification ordinances, specifically 509 and 2510. Staff had several meetings with parties involved, including Grover Beach United, as well as ourselves, and we reviewed quite a few city ordinances throughout the state that offer special events, parades, and other parks activities. Through those reviews, we found that our park and beautification ordinance, 2509 and 2510 in particular, was sufficient in its current form, and it actually was simplistic for where it was at. And including that into a modified or amended ordinance may be too cumbersome. It would not really meet what the goal was that the council gave, which was to streamline the special events ordinance. So we also reviewed the parades ordinance that we have in comparison to others, other cities, and found that our parade ordinance is pretty sufficient for the one event we do currently have a year, and that the parade ordinance spells out the definitions and really does have a good timeline of what you're supposed to do, what the applicant's supposed to do, and staff. So, again, including that ordinance into a special event ordinance didn't seem feasible and didn't seem like it would meet what your streamlined process wanted to be. So that left us to go back to looking at the special events ordinance that we currently have in place. Again, going off of what your directions were, we put together an outline that was given to you in attachment number 1 that is part of what we have done so far, and we bring that before you for some discussion and to have you guys provide direction to us in reference to other items you would like to see in the ordinance. And that concludes my report. I'll answer any questions, and Ms. Petker is also here to answer any questions.
Okay. Anyone have any questions of Police Chief Peters? OK, Okay, Councilmember Wright.
Can I go next? Because I'm not sure exactly where they are in this mess.
Councilmember Shaw.
Thank you.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding all the attachments. So attachment 2 is just the old ordinance as is, right?
That's the current ordinance.
Okay. Yes. I just want to make sure I was not missing something. On attachment 1, one of the things we did talk about a while ago was additional direction regarding to address vagrancy issues occurring at city parks. And I know we've had some changes in our parks, and I know to a certain extent we've passed laws probably as far as we can. But I know at different times it's been brought up, and sometimes it's been later in the evening. But I think the mayor has brought up at times that San Luis does have certain regulations possibly regarding their downtown or uses of benches or something like that. And I just wondered if that was something, if you guys haven't already looked at, maybe you could just look at. I just want to make sure we're doing the things that other towns are doing.
Yes, and that is something that we are going to be taking a look at, and as we bring up the potential of having a vagrancy meeting as well and furthering the review of what type of ordinance would we like to fashion. In my review of some of the other cities throughout the state, they had a clause in their park ordinances that said that no giving of food or clothing or other materials will be permitted within the park without a special permit from the Parks Department. So a lot of the stuff that we're looking at, which could be applied, would be in the parks ordinance because it is the use of the parks, and it wouldn't necessarily be specific for a special event.
Okay. All right. And my only other comment would be when you guys do, I think everything, you know, all the suggestions look good. When you do put it all together, it would be helpful for me to see it written out like a strikeout, so I know what's changing specifically.
Yes, the draft ordinance that we will bring before you will have the strikeout fonts and so forth associated.
Thank you.
Good. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Bright.
Yes, I too, I was looking for that, so that's what we're used to seeing, so
yeah.
That'd be really good. So then, I don't know that this question is really going to be, well, anyway, I'm just going forward. Okay, so I'm looking at the old ordinance or Article 3, Chapter 11, Attachment 2. And under specific regulations for outdoor assemblies, this seems to be incredibly onerous, I guess, where all food concessions, I mean, all of this stuff has to be, I guess I don't really understand that particular part of our existing ordinance. So, but really to take a look at this now, I think I'd prefer to see it in a strikeout format so I know what you're planning to strike, what you're planning to keep,
sure,
and that sort of thing. But as far as all the outline that you've presented, it looks like it is very cohesive, and I think it can certainly work towards a more feasible and workable ordinance. So there was no question there, was there?
That's okay, though.
A lot of rambling.
That's fine. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Thank you. I guess I was a little confused, which it sounds like my fellow council members might have been as well, with regards to what we were going to be reviewing tonight with regards to what we typically see with a strikeout kind of a approach. So if I'm understanding the outline, you're looking for, from what I can tell, a discussion setting the number of attendees for special events and outdoor assemblies at 100 and 25 for demonstrations. Do we have demonstrations? I mean, that's a new topic into this discussion.
That is new. While conducting some reviews, we noticed that there, I noticed that some of the ordinances that I was reviewing also had demonstration additions in them. And those demonstrations are basically for demonstrations that are going to interfere with public safety, whether it be traffic or access control to facilities, whether if you're going to have a demonstration that surrounded your park facility. It was a good idea to have demonstrations in there if you're at 25 or more, that there's communication with staff prior to the demonstration. It's not that we're going to prevent demonstrations, it's that we want to work with the people who want to fairly and appropriately demonstrate and be able to have that point of contact with them instead of arriving later with a couple officers trying to find out who is actually in charge of the demonstration. So for public safety purposes, adding a demonstration piece to a special events ordinance would allow us that communication prior to the demonstration to make sure everybody's on the same page and things go smoothly.
Okay, so going through the demonstration, so if there's a flash mob or a kind of an organized demonstration, that would be where that would fall in. If there's a, I'll call it an ad hoc demonstration in support of the victims from Paris or other events, the likelihood is that's not going to have an organized leader. So how would the police deal with that from a special events, or how would the city deal with that from a special events standpoint?
Well, generally with a demonstration or an event like that, if you have, this is sets the minimum limit at 25. So if you're going to have 25 people there, generally there's somebody who has organized it, or who has sent out notices requesting others to attend. Sometimes those are even on social media, and we can reach out to those folks and say, hey, let's communicate, let's be on the same page to understand what your demonstration is, so that they can also understand what the public safety implications can be. Anything larger than that, and other political demonstrations or large demonstrations that could just all of a sudden appear down Grand Avenue or something, those should be organized through us prior to that.
Okay. So then going to the number of attendees for special events and outdoor assemblies, basically reducing that number from 500 to 100 is the direction you're looking for on that. And I forget the number that we were discussing previously, if that was down to...
15 was original discussions back in April, and the 100 number was one that we felt was fair enough for our staff throughout the city's parks and recs, as well as the police and public works, could accommodate, could look at and say this is something we can handle, or we can communicate with them that there has to be other measures taken. This would also not interfere. I know Mr. Mayor brought up the family reunion sizes could get quite large. Well, that actually is going to fall under your parks ordinance, parks and beautification ordinance that's currently in place. And staff already has a way of mitigating those concerns with that ordinance. So the 100 people ordinance is just a number right now. If it's obviously if council felt that number should be higher or lower, that is obviously a discretion you can choose.
And I guess the overriding question that leads me to is, and I guess where I'm hoping to see when this comes back is, how is this going to make it more attractive for people to use the city of Grover and utilize the facilities of the city of Grover Beach for their special events? I mean, I think that's one of the discussion points I've tried to bring forward is, maybe a special event ordinance is inherently difficult. How do we get out of the public's way in order to make it attractive and effective for them to use our facilities? And can you kind of give a glimpse as to how you anticipate fulfilling that note with this framework?
Sure. What we look at doing in the future is when the draft ordinance comes back and is ultimately approved, we want to, one, make it streamlined where it's simple and easier to understand. As Councilmember Bright's pointed out, this ordinance has some confusing language and articles in it. So we obviously want to clean up that and bring what is relevant to today instead of 1979. And we want to make sure that everybody has that same understanding. So when an applicant comes to the city for a special events ordinance, we envision that the applicant will receive an application to fill out. They will submit their application with a fee for the staff to review for cost recovery. The staff will conduct a review of the application and determine what the applicant is going to need to fulfill their permit. And then the communication will be back to that applicant with a list of materials. This is what you need to do, and these are the dates you need to get it done by in order to get approval for your event. And then the applicant will take that list, go forth, and do all the necessary things that they need to in order to meet that that requirement for the permit. And then they'll bring that completed portion to staff within 60 days prior to the event, and we'll have, as directed, city manager approval. With that streamlined process and with the easier application process, I think it would be a lot smoother for people applying for events.
Okay. And so the intent of, and I think Councilmember Bright brought this up with regards to the Section 3981 under violations. So with regards to what people can't do before they obtain their license, hopefully we're going to then make that a positive. Here's what you can do as you're going through the process, and here's how you might jeopardize your permit status, but we're going to make it, I'm hoping, a friendlier atmosphere than the language that's in here too, for people to, again, to utilize our facilities. The last question, and this is more just a semantical issue, I think, which was it? Oh, one of the bullet points was identify the appeal process for denial of a permit by the city manager designee. I would also suggest that we include if the city manager approves it and there's another group that from the public, that there be a process for members of the public to appeal an approval decision as well. Not that I hope it ever occurs, but.
Yeah, well, I believe that I would say that most if not all of the city manager's decisions are appealable to this council.
Right. Correct. So, but this just says for denial.
Okay,
so,
I got you.
And, yeah. So approval denial.
Okay. So okay. Make it broaden that scope.
Broaden that. Right.
Perfect. Count read on, Jeff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Councilmember Nichols, do you have anything?
No, I think everybody has covered everything that I was looking at.
One more question.
Oh, you have one more?
I have one more.
Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. So then this is an ordinance for outdoor assemblies, special events. What if you want to use the streets and a park? Do you have to have two permits?
If they're in conjunction with each other, say like the Grover Beach United
right.
Car Show, no, that would fall under one.
Which one?
It'd fall under the special events one.
And why would that be?
Because that would be the whole event, the scale of the event, and the amount of people and the amount of resources that are needed would fall under that.
Under a special event.
Yeah, because the parks permit is only going to talk about up to 100 people, what they currently
I have. See. Okay. Oh, that makes sense. Okay. Very good. Okay.
Okay.
Actually, that's.
Thank you.
If I may, that sparked a question. I mean,
sure.
For me. So, going back to either utilizing streets and parks and more than one facility, and falling back on my 100 people, was there any discussion about tiering the number of the application for the number of attendees? Let's say there's a small group that wants to have 100, but the Grover Beach United has 1,500 and Stone Soup has 2,000, or Grover Beach United goes to 5,000, or the Exploration Station has an event on their front porch that has a couple thousand. So was there any discussion about varying requirements otherwise, or just have the kind of the one size fits all at 100 people?
Well, the ordinance would be anything at 100 people or above would be a special event. Now, the information that we would hand back after the application is received by staff, and staff conducts the review of it and says, okay, your event's going to have 1,000 people at it. Well, these are the things we're going to have a list available for them. These are the things that you need to attend to for 1,000 people. If it's for just 150 people, obviously the list is going to probably be quite a bit smaller. There may be some similarities between the lists, but an event with 1,000 people to 150 will have some different requirements.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. I think all my questions really have been asked, but I'll think of one. So, Chief, you're talking about streamlining the permitting process, and I know that all of my colleagues have really asked the question, and Mayor Pro Tem very specifically. So, for the Grover United Car Show or anything like that, so you're saying you're going to streamline this permitting process, and you also said they would need to submit an application 60 days prior to the event. So is that, are you saying it's going to take 60 days to get them approval, 60 days or less?
No, it's actually, the entire process would be completed 60 days prior to the event. They can apply for the car show up to 1 year prior to the event. So they can get started basically right after one event is over. They can get started with the processing and their advertising and so forth right after that event. So this allows the leadway for them to, if they know they're going to have another event the following year, immediately start the process with the city, get the applications going, and that allows them to do a little bit more advertising later on. But the whole process should be completed 60 days prior to the event date, and that allows time for the city manager to give the final approval and any appeal process to come before the council if necessary.
Okay. So I guess I'm looking for a commitment. So what we don't want to happen is what happens now is someone submits a year out and they're working through the process and then they get to 60 days before an event and somehow they come to us and say, we've been at this for 10 months. This is ridiculous. You did this before. So if I come in and start a process, let's say in January, and I provide everything that's needed, will city staff approve that earlier than later? Because I do want to get a permit so I can know to make a commitment for, you know, advertising and things of that nature. So I think I'd like to know what the process we put in. I know there's some variables we can't control, meaning how responsive will an applicant be, but we need to have a review process that we can say it's going to take 3 to 5 months or 2 to 3 months.
Sure. And what we're looking at right now is, depending on the size of the event, we're actually going to have deadlines for staff to bring a response back to the applicant. The applicant will also have deadlines to submit the next stage. So each party involved will have, these are the deadlines we want to meet. The applicant will have deadlines as well to come in by that stage, and then the application process will continue. So it could be a multi-stage or phase process with each one having a deadline on both sides.
Okay, very good. And then I was looking, and I think Councilmember Wright touched on this drinking water clause under section 3979. I think that's something we'll want to take a look at a lot closer when this comes back to us in the legislative form. But I did want to ask a question on page 4, item E, hours of operation. I'm not sure if I'm reading this wrong or if it's a typo. Hours of operation, no outdoor assembly activity shall take place between the hours of 12 p.m. and 9 a.m.
Attachment
should be 12 a.m.
Or which attachment?
It's the existing ordinance.
At page 4, subparagraph E of the existing ordinance, it says 12 p.m. and 9 a.m. I'm thinking that they probably meant 12 a.m. to 9 a.m.
That would be my hope. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll be changing that, correct?
I wonder if nobody wants to. Nobody'd be there.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. This is a business item, but let me see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address this item. Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Good evening, Anita Schauer. Just for Mr. Lee's benefit, we did have some demonstrators at Sown Soup, not a protest, but there were about 12 people there that were totally against anyone eating any meat. And they showed up, and they were organized, and they were nice, but they were trying to incite some kind of response. Judith Bean from the AGGB Chamber quieted things down and told all of us how to behave, and they eventually left. I don't remember if they were there an hour, but I would say that they were there an hour, and then that was the end of them. So that does happen. So we probably need some kind of language as to what we should do if that happens during an event, other than contact the police department.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that reminder. I was there when that was happening. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Seeing no one else come forward, let me close to the public, bring it back to the council. So I think there was a lot of direction given here, and did anyone hear anything that they disagreed with? Do we think the direction given the staff is something that, and hopefully they've got direction that they can work with and bring back to us in a legislative form, the ordinance, what's going to stay, what's going to be changed, and what's going to obviously include and delete it. Okay, so at this point, I don't think we need to make a motion. Mayor Pro Tem, what do you got?
Actually, I just have one question. It's my scope, schedule, budget. This is going to be on schedule. So when's it coming back to us?
I envision it come back as quickly as possible, given the schedule that you have in front of you in your next council meeting. So as soon as we can get it drafted and brought back, we'll do so.
Why is it?
My goal would be before the end of the year. That's
okay.
My goal, but obviously I'd have to defer to.
We're going to end up with some pretty major things on the December agenda. Yeah. So,
and I guess my only concern with regards to that is it's been approximately 2 years as we've kind of been working through this process. If we don't have an event ordinance back in front of us, I'd like to have maybe, I don't know if an interim is appropriate for some events that have kind of been struggled, whether through city or their responsiveness type of situation with the car show.
How about we do this? I mean, other than the holiday parade, do we really have any large events scheduled in December?
No.
So maybe you can bring it back in January.
Right.
And maybe the second meeting in January, because I would like, you know, we while we're drivers, we do want staff to have happy holidays.
Finishing out.
See, Mary, mine can be nice.
Yeah.
That's the goal. Sounds good. Okay. Thank
holiday
you.
Holiday gifts.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
Could I request a very short break?
Okay. So let's take a 5-minute break.
Thank you.
Grover Beach City Council meeting, Monday, November 16, 2015. I believe when we concluded last, we had just addressed item number 7, so we're going to move to item number 8. This is a status report regarding capital improvement project. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This item is continued from the last meeting. The council had requested in a more thorough update on the individual projects. That is the report before you that you have before you now. The projects that you'll find reports on include the Oak Park Boulevard Rehabilitation Project, the Street Rehabilitation Project 2015-1, 2015-2. I also know there's been some interest in 2016-1, which I can also say we do have funding for the design on that on the next phase. That's actually being taken out of the current bond issue, so we should be able to move right along with that. CIP 312 Transit Station Expansion Project, the upgrade of the 2 and 4 inch water lines, and CIP 275, the Grover Beach Lodge, which we've discussed to some degree at this particular point. Rather than going into a lot of detail regarding the individual projects, both myself, the Public Works Director, and the Community Development Director are to here and present and able to answer any questions you have relative to progress and tasks completed and other matters of concern.
Okay, very good. Mayor Pro Tem Lee, you have questions?
Yep.
So, I thought I'd start with him.
Right. So I have a couple questions, and I'll throw them out there, and hopefully staff will figure out who's going to respond to them. So we'll start with CIP 276, the Oak Park Rehabilitation Project. Wanted to determine or ask the status of the contracts for Gehring and Taylor and Wallace for the options. So because I know we had a short time frame with regards to getting those plans completed, and wanted to make sure that everything was on track.
Councilmember Lee, or Mayor Pro Tem Lee, to answer your question, we had completed negotiations with GTA to perform design of the geometric improvements to the intersection, and have been in negotiations with the Wallace Group relative to their original proposal, given that the scope of work had changed relative to the pavement improvements in West Grand Avenue from Oak Park Boulevard east to the city limit. We did receive a proposal from the Wallace Group. That proposal did not meet with our satisfaction, and so we're in discussions with them yesterday and today, and I expect to see a revised proposal hopefully by tomorrow. And if possible, we'll wrap that discussion up by the end of the week. So it is trailing behind a little bit.
So is the Wallace contract, or so the Gehring and Taylor contract has been signed, and they're continuing work, or is the Wallace contract holding up the Gehring and Taylor?
They're both on hold.
They're both on hold. Okay, and so anticipated we're not going to make the December 10th. Anticipated deadline for that was in the RFPs?
We're moving ahead with the base project.
Okay.
You know, with design and anticipation of a bid announcement date, and then if these projects can be designed in the same time period, great. If they can't, we'll either through a bid addendum or through perhaps even a contract change order address how the intersection improvements coordinate with the base project.
Okay, so the base bid would be on track. So the optional items are kind of pending additional negotiations with obviously timing to be determined as to how the two of them are going to marry together for construction. Because the intent is still to construct all those improvements at the same time, funding dependent.
Funding dependent, yes.
Okay.
Jeff, can I?
Of course.
So why is the contract with GTA on hold? I know you said you were negotiating with Wallace, but you didn't answer what's the hold up with GTA?
If council recalls, there was a total project amount anticipated, proposal from the Wallace Group in the amount of $82,000. And Wallace Group had indicated that if either of the projects were done alone, without the other project, the actual total amount would be closer to $94,000, I believe, was the amount. We negotiated a contract amount with GTA, which seemed to be an acceptable amount, and the scope of work was based on a series of meetings we had with both firms, and we approved the scope of work and the contract amount. However, the Wallace Group had yet to revise their proposal, so when we received the first Wallace Group proposal, it actually exceeded the amount that we had estimated we would want to spend on the two together, and that Wallace Group had proposed on the two together. So it's based on some changes in coordination and some duplication, perhaps, of efforts needed as a result of the additional work.
Okay, go ahead, John.
So, which actually leads to another question of that is, I know one of the, if I recall, one of the topics of conversation was that the Gehring and Taylor Wallace scopes were kind of structured that way because of the base bid and how that all fit. And so, do we, if the Wallace negotiations aren't successful, do you then shift gears and provide an opportunity for Gehring and Taylor to bid on that additional scope, or what's the plan for that?
The government code group would preclude that. If we were unable to negotiate successfully with the Wallace group, our option would be at that point to advertise for proposals and go through the proposal process, which would be 30 to 60 days, and then evaluate all the proposals received based on qualifications again with the committee. So it would be basically restarting that process on that one option.
Okay, so and then this is going to shift gears into a question for our city manager with regards to contracting. Is in the opportunity with the financing, did we go through an RFP process for Mr. Pache and so forth? I mean,
The difference between the two is you're dealing with a different kind of professional service. I'm provided a lot more discretion relative to contracting professional services for non-construction related items. Construction items are generally covered by the government code, whereas retention of professional services are much less restrictive.
Right, of which design plans would be considered a professional service.
But it's construction related.
Okay. I would generate on to my next question is under the last paragraph of that CIP 276 update, it says that Phillips 66 is now going to begin construction in January. So what was there? I know initially it was going to be November. And so where did we lose the month and a half, 2 months?
According to a representative from Phillips 66, they had to reorganize their schedule to meet certain permitting deadlines. They had, as an example, they had to get into certain areas and begin construction and complete construction earlier than they had originally anticipated. They were areas that they thought they might be able to delay and to move our part of the project ahead. And again, based on primarily environmental permits, they had to go in before a certain deadline.
Okay, so then I guess the good thing is that Oak Park's not going to be torn up during the holiday season, but the hiccup is that it's not going to be complete as soon as we had hoped. So then I'm going to shift gears down to CIP 295, if that's okay. So if we got, which is the street rehab and repair, either the 2015-1, which those streets are predominantly complete, notwithstanding some waterline issues. So the bidding for 15-2 I see is on the city's website, and so that's moving forward. So then there's a discussion or an exhibit in here with regards to what I affectionately call 15-3, the maintained streets, and so I see a number of streets. What's the time frame for those going out to bid? If we as a council, I guess, do we need to have input on that, or do we proceed with that exhibit as direction given to staff?
I'm sorry, which again?
If we look under on exhibit, what attachment is it?
Attachment three,
which is probably the 11x17 that shows 15-1 in purple, 15-2 in red, and then 15-3 in blue and yellow.
Not on your attachment three. It's not the blue
color. Oh, sorry.
That's true. Good point.
So, I mean, there seems to be quite a few streets that we're going to be able to accomplish. Is this intended for us to give you direction on those, or is this basically your recommendation moving forward? You'll have the adequate funds for this, as well as the design of 16-1?
So, taking the remaining funds based on the engineer's estimate, so that, again, still subject to revision based on actual bids, but based on the final engineer's estimate for 2015-2, and subtracting from those available funds what we anticipate to be the design costs for the first bond, the next bond release, a set of streets for that, we believe there's in the neighborhood of about $415,000 remaining. And then, you know, primarily we're looking at streets that would require light maintenance, thinking that is probably the best bang for the buck with the small amount of money that is remaining, as well as being able to complete as many of those as possible so that we are focusing more on heavy maintenance and rehabilitation with the next bond-funded project. So this list essentially follows the recommendations of the pavement management system for those streets that are at their critical point needing light maintenance, whereas if they, for example, were allowed to trail on for a few more years, they would ultimately need heavy maintenance at as much as double the cost. So this would extend the life of the streets identified here, which if you don't have in color would be difficult to follow, but we'll make sure that council can get those in color if they don't have them. Any rate, yeah, so this is based on the pavement management system recommendations, and these are streets that are right at the critical PCI, and this is about how many you could do with that available fund.
Okay.
These were selected, you know, to try and tie to the best, as best we could, to the existing projects, as well as to complete entire neighborhoods if possible.
Yeah, and from what I can see, it actually looks like a very significant area of roadway that can be accomplished with that light maintenance schedule, which then leads to my next question, which is when do you anticipate going out to bid or out to RFP for design of 16-1? So with the goal, the intent, of the desire on my part, at least, to have I think we're going to be having the discussion of the size of the bond issuance in the spring of 2016. I think it would be I'd love to see the prudence bear out that as soon as the if we move forward with the issuance of the bonds of 16, that as soon as those funds are in the bank, we're out to bid, ready to construct, so that we have the momentum of that funding. So, which then backing up is when do we start the design for 16-1?
So I hadn't projected a calendar for that yet. Just you know, based on my understanding of the workload right now, and working with our project manager, he's pretty well fully employed. And you know, the interaction between the project manager, the various design firms, the bidding, the administration, we'll be looking for a little bit of a gap in the work. Hopefully, with final completion of 2015-1, which still is in the punch list phase. We should see that, so I think we can begin contemplating putting together an RFP maybe next month. I'd say late next month probably is more likely, and so figure proposals several months after that, so probably looking at some January, February time period. It's probably reasonable.
What was when design would start?
When we would have proposals.
Proposals for the, okay. Okay. So then my next question has to do with the transit station. And having just come in from out of town, I haven't looked. Was there any tree trimming, or can you update us on the status of the tree trimming or clearing in that area?
So the tree trimming, we'll have to wait. Correct me if I get this wrong, but the tree trimming will have to wait until the NEPA process is complete. Once that process is complete, then we can do the tree trimming and tree removal, actually, in areas where we anticipate the improvements to be located. So that process is still December for the flood study, I believe, is what we're anticipating. The flood study will be done in December, and so NEPA should be complete maybe January. It is on the calendar here, so just to double check.
I think it was anticipated to be done in November, or initially.
Right, so it is trailing behind just based on the studies themselves.
Okay. So then my next question,
January,
currently on the schedule. Okay, I was reading the as part of the lodge project, but okay, that was okay. Next question goes to the municipal broadband network, CIP 389. It says in the update that additional work will be needed by Digital West. What additional work?
I can probably answer that question. When we were doing our review, we noticed that there were a couple of conduit sections that hadn't been included in the South Industrial part of town that need to be added to the final plans. And we should have noticed that maybe a little bit earlier, but we just brought to our attention within the last week or so. I've corresponded with them. Hopefully it should be back to us for a final check, and then we can bring it back to the council for authorization to go to bid.
Okay. So is that still anticipated to be before the end of the fiscal calendar year?
Yes.
Okay. And then I don't know if we want to have any overall discussion on the Oak Park. It's a attachment 2 with regards to the bulb out. So I don't know if that's more of a maybe Greg, you can explain what the if I understand the update correctly, because of the ADA considerations of a ramp, there's now a proposal at Saratoga for a bulb out at that intersection and relocating the crosswalk up into up to this intersection versus it having been at Newport currently.
Yeah, so you have that correct. Basically, there's a crosswalk at an uncontrolled intersection now. Definitely would not be my recommendation to have that crosswalk remain there. However, you do have the controlled crosswalk at Saratoga. And in addition, in order to provide for a crosswalk crossing Oak Park at now the controlled intersection of Saratoga, we did need additional space to be able to make the ramp requirements for ADA. So it's sort of a win-win, if you will. It does provide also a shorter crossing distance. As you can imagine, crossing Oak Park itself is probably a pretty daunting experience. So now you have a controlled intersection, you have a slightly shorter crossing distance, and by having the bulb outs on either side of the crosswalk, we're able to provide room to meet the ADA accessibility requirements.
Any concerns with southbound traffic going through the intersection, effectively having a smaller lane in that area, or is it still 12-foot lanes? Actually, looks like it's 12-foot lanes, 12-foot lanes with. Is there currently parking north of Saratoga? Not that I don't think I've ever seen anybody park there.
There are bits and pieces of parking all along on the west side of Oak Park Boulevard. I believe this is one of the sections, and that would essentially just be in the parking lane. So the edge of traveled way would be virtually identical to what it is now.
Okay. Let's see. I believe that was all of my questions. Thanks.
Okay. Barbara, you have any questions?
No.
Karen?
Yes, I do. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to be all over the map. I'm not going to be nearly as organized as our Mayor Pro Tem is over there. Sorry. Regarding the CIP 267, the upgrade of the water mains, when we had originally started discussing the upgrade of the streets, we had talked about North 16th. And I know that there was some kind of an issue with the sufficient water for fire issues or something up, I think, on the Saratoga, maybe Newport, between Newport and Saratoga area. Can you just kind of give me a brief review of that? Do you know what I'm talking about at all?
Yes.
Okay.
It's sort of unrelated to the project as you see it, but in looking at the street projects, one of the things we did was go back to the originally adopted water master plan, which included a model of the city's water system. And as a result of that model, the model identified a number of existing water mains that needed to be upsized, primarily because at fire flow and velocities, the velocity was excessive in the pipe section. North 16th was one of those that would require an upgraded section of water main. That's a fairly expensive project up North 16th. If you look at the capital improvement project 267, that is a project that we applied for a while ago, and it was for based on upgrade of existing 2-inch and 4-inch steel water mains, which are grossly undersized even for domestic purposes, as well as their steel. They're very old. Connections and repairs are becoming a problem with those water mains, even as we just try to use them for normal use. So in application for that grant, the CDBG-funded grant, we had identified all as many of the 2-inch and 4-inch water mains as we could that needed to be upgraded, and as a result of that, we're successful in obtaining that grant.
But 16th wasn't part of...
It is not one of those 2-inch
okay.
or 4-inch water mains that needs upgrade.
All right. Thank you. Then if we could just talk a little bit about the ADA requirements for Oak Park. Staff report says that reconstruction of pedestrian ramps at all intersections in the project to meet the ADA. So that is every intersection. So we're talking Saratoga and then down and, I mean, and Newport and Brighton and so on. So they're all going to have...
They'll all be reconstructed to meet ADA. So basically four corners per intersection.
Okay. So then you were talking about one of the intersections that's not controlled. Is that the Saratoga?
No.
That's Newport.
Newport. Right.
Newport.
It's south of Saratoga.
Right. Okay. So Newport. So you're going to have an ADA ramp or reconstruct the curb, but you're talking about taking out the intersection? I mean, the crosswalk?
Yes. So the crosswalk right now is at Newport's an uncontrolled intersection, which means that basically cars wouldn't stop other than if they happen to notice somebody in the crosswalk.
Mm-hmm. So that's basically, yes.
Yeah. So
true.
You know, as your city engineer and I guess your traffic engineer, really, because other than that, we don't have one. You know, my recommendation would be to move that to a controlled intersection where vehicles are stopping regardless of whether there's someone in the intersection.
Move
the crosswalk.
Okay.
The crosswalk will be moved one block north.
So there's not a crosswalk at Saratoga now?
Well, there's not a striped and identified crosswalk.
Oh,
I'm
there every day.
At every intersection.
There's, I guess, because there's a stop sign, I just assume that there's a crosswalk.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I'm not sure that I like that idea, but I mean, you have the ramps for people to utilize them to cross the street, but you're don't really want them to cross the street.
That's correct. So what you'll notice actually with the design of the new ramps is that none of the ramps, with the exception of Saratoga, will actually point across Oak Park. They'll all be aligned with Oak Park and cross
They're going to go north and south. They're not going to go east and west. Okay.
Only the one at Saratoga, which we're having to build bulb outs to actually construct.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Will cross Oak Park.
Well, that makes a lot more sense to me. Thank you. And I believe that's it for me. Oh, yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor?
Okay. I really, the report was very informative, and I was really happy to hear about the changing of that crosswalk because I used it the other day, and it was kind of like Frogger. So I was just comparing maps here, and I think you've more than got it down, but I wanted to just mention where you're proposing the light maintenance. You've cross-referenced that already, and that's not going to interfere with the waterline project, right?
That is correct.
Okay. And you know, we had some, we've had repeated public comments from Mr. Weisong, and he's brought up many times this waterline project. Could you just explain again that, you know, why we're doing this project now?
The project that's currently underway?
Right. Why we're doing water lines at the same time as streets.
Okay, so in cases where we're completely reconstructing a street, knowing that there's a substandard water line, in this case 2-inch water lines, there's a 2-inch water line in Brighton, a 2-inch water line in Nice, and a lot of the houses were connected to that 2-inch water line, steel water line. That is substandard, and the water line is very old and corroding. And so rather than wait for the water line to fail under a brand new street, it's an opportunity to the street's going to be completely torn up anyway. The cost of trenching now is greatly reduced. The cost of repairing the water line is greatly reduced. And again, once the street is repaved, we know we have a good water line, quality water line, and good connections to that. Okay. So that's why we did it. And that process would be continued to be considered throughout the street projects.
Thank you. And we had grant funding to do that project as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. No, this is city bond funding funds from the city water enterprise fund.
Okay. And just going on one other comment he made, because I know many people perhaps watching at home, and including myself, may be worried that they're going to end up with dirt in their pipes. Could you explain how that could happen, or what safeguards will keep the rest of our citizens from having dirt come up in their water lines? Because that kind of made me a little concerned.
I think it's a great question. You know, it is construction. There's any number. You know, Murphy's Law probably governs in construction quite often. There's any number of things that could happen. But in general, a licensed contractor who's with an A license, who's legally qualified to do waterline work under the supervision of our city crews as well as our project inspector, basically follows a certain protocol in terms of flushing the lines, making the connections. The lines are chlorinated and filled, allowed to kill all the bacteria, then they're flushed again. We experience very few problems on any of the services that we connected. In this particular case with Mr. Weisong, who was here earlier, it's hard to say. I mean, it could have been a minor error, you know, during the connection of the line that it actually fell in the dirt somehow and was unnoticed. It could just be that we just disturbed existing scale and sediment that was already in the house lines. It's really quite possible. If it helps for explanation, I remodeled an older home years ago, and I had all galvanized pipes, and you couldn't have put this pin through any of my pipes. They were corroded and full of scale and rust deposits, and that's really typical with a 40 to 50 year old home with steel pipe. So one of the things that does happen is if you connect a new water line to an existing home, there's a potential to disturb that scale and those deposits in the line. So that can get flushed through the house and end up in your aerators. It can end up in the toilet valves. And you know, it can appear that you have less pressure and less flow, and really you just need to clean the aerators out and get the scale and sediment out of them. But it's pretty typical.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, okay. That's all the questions I had.
You have a follow-up?
I did have a follow-up to Councilmember Shaw's questions with regards to the water line. So figuring out how I ask this appropriately is may take a moment. The contractor did not ask for a change order on that work because that was I'll just be blunt. So the infiltration didn't cost the city anything, did it? So there was no change orders issued to the contractor based upon the infiltration of the dirt into the homes. correct? So the contractor addressed that issue without a contract change order because that was part of the work that he should have been responsible for?
The contractor is responsible for any and all damages, issues, anything that comes up as a result of his work. He essentially owns the work until we issue notice of completion. So there actually is a change order, but it's actually a deduction change order, a deduction from the amount owed to the contractor to make up for the claim that was tendered to the city.
Okay. Okay.
So the real question really is the things that we can control based on lessons learned with respect to what happened on Brighton. Are you recommending any changes to the contractor that gets hired if there is a water line upgrade component to the project?
So a number of we did notice a number of things, not in particular that caused or resulted in sediment appearing in Mr. Weisong's house. But we did notice a number of things. A typical contract identifies material and identifies processes, but primarily by outcome. For example, the disinfection process. It's disinfection tablets, and the following amount will be placed in the line. They will be left in for 24 hours. The line will be flushed. Then tests will be taken. Tests will be, if tests are positive for bacteria, the line will be drained and, disinfected again, that kind of thing. But beyond that, project plans and project specifications generally don't identify specifically how to do the work. And that is the beauty of bidding. Three, four different contractors may have three or four different ways of actually constructing something. And the contractor who has the most ingenious and creative and cost-effective way would theoretically have the lowest bid. So we don't tell them specifically how to do it. If they're a licensed A contractor, they're qualified by license to do the work. But we are putting controls in place, and we are had discussions with our City Public Works crew that we maybe have a greater presence during the filling, the draining and filling of the lines and during the connection process so that we're certain that we see what we're getting is how we would normally do it.
Okay, so that's the change. That's the lesson learned. So we're going to move on from that. I want to go back to Oak Park, and I'm going to be straightforward. I got two, three, maybe four items. So if you've worked out a scope and a price with GTA, I would suggest you move forward because I'm not quite sure why. I thought in our previous discussions that GTA's work would help inform whatever work Wallace was doing. So I don't know why the two would be on hold. And if Wallace is not negotiating with us, given the level of contracts they've got in this community, it's an issue. I'd say get it resolved. I think that's the first part, the first comment. The second is the part that Wallace, we were talking about having Wallace do, and is the part that talks about Grand Avenue, correct, from intersection to Easterly City Line.
That's correct.
If we can't work out a price with them, then I suggest you come back and we can look at changing the scope of that project, and maybe then we do open that piece back up to bid. And I think it's just sends a bad signal if we're holding other things up and we're missing deadlines. And while I know there's a lot of work going on, I think the staff understood, I'm hoping you understood, our urgency with getting Oak Park done. That said, Phillips, I thought we were pretty clear with Phillips that if that project's not done and our project is ready to go, then they're going to have to wait. We are not... And I know this is just me, one person talking, but I'm hoping I have two people who agree with me. The community is frustrated with Oak Park, even more so than the other streets. And to have Phillips now delayed, if that starts to delay and affect us moving forward on that street, then I think the staff needs to come back to us and we need to figure something out. I think it's unacceptable for Phillips to tell us one thing and then obviously come back and say, oh, we thought we could, but we can't. So got a huge issue there. So there's a big concern I've got. So those are the three things on Oak Park. Jeff, I think I wasn't with you originally. We were talking about design of the streets in 2016-1. Mm-hmm. And so I know, staff, you're recommending, since the streets we approved for the next phase of street rehabilitation were all were mostly heavy work, and so now you're putting together a light work component, correct?
Just to basically use the remainder of the funds, right?
Okay, so then that means that we won't be able to get out in front of 2016-1 streets.
No, that's not what I heard.
Okay.
That is not the case. We have reserved
confirm it again.
For design of 2016.
That's what I had thought originally. Okay. Very good. So then I think maybe the question will be to staff, to city manager and staff. So you guys decide on 2016-1 streets included, I believe, Newport,
yes,
and Long Branch. So I guess the question will be, when would we see or have a discussion about the concept of what the design of those streets look like? So I don't know if you guys have given any thought to that.
We had Mr. Mayor talked about that for mid to late January, early February, to get some direction from the council.
Okay.
Before we get into the actual design process, and we'll probably end up coming back to you with a couple of recommendations regarding the waterline issues for both South 13th and North 16th. They were referenced today. We're going to have to take a look at how we get those funded.
Okay. And those are really my comments. I think the staff report is nicely done, has a lot of details, but I hope that we want to just again stress the urgency with getting Oak Park underway. And I think I know that when you brought the design for 13th Street to us, one of the concerns we had said was, this is going to slow us down on that group of streets. And so I'm trusting that you will be able to either get that back in as a contract amendment so that we can get some momentum on these streets, because we finished the first three, and now we're going to be looking at 2 to 3 months of what the community is going to see is inactivity, and that gives me concern.
Mr. Mayor, yeah. Relative to that, it just so you know, they have gone out to bid. The bids will close next month, and we'll bring it to council as soon as they're at the next meeting. The only issue then will be, we'll get those 2nd Street started, and 13th Street won't delay that process. And it will happen after the first of the year, as soon as weather and it can permit.
Great. I know we want some rain, and that's great, but we want to be ready to move on streets when everything clears up. Okay.
Can I inject one last question, not on streets, but actually on the broadband network?
Sure.
Okay, great. And I'm wondering, realizing that there's still some work for Digital West to do, but has the staff kind of taken the next step of how do we the connectivity for either the city or for the schools?
Yeah. We've been working on that all along in terms of making sure that the boxes are put in the right places to allow for those connections. We probably, Greg, should have the discussion with the schools. I know that I've asked that the plans be reviewed by county to make sure that they meet their requirements as well for the county locations on Long Branch and 16th.
Okay. And so, and the county is still on,
yes,
board with the review as well as the funding of a portion of the project?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess with the taking that from the next step of the implementation by the city, so obviously we're going to have a brand new shiny network that we're going to be able to connect into, and making sure that if the city needs to upgrade anything or needs resources, I'm assuming that'll be part of next year's budget discussion.
Most likely, we're meeting internally. We've formed a technology committee with representatives from each department, in part to, in recognition that the broadband is going to be coming, and We have technology upgrades that we need to make internally as well. So we're trying to plan for those.
Okay.
This is a business item, but I will see if there's anyone from the public or community that would like to address this item. Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back to the council. And I think, Rob, we've made quite a bit of comments, and thank you. And Greg, thank you for the staff report, and we'll move on. So we just concluded with item number 8. We have no pooled consent agenda items. What I am going to do is chair's prerogative is I'm going to hold off on the council committee reports because I see folks who are still here for some items. So I want to hold off on that, and we're going to move past committee reports and council communications into the city manager's reports. And Bob, maybe when you start, you could take item 10 first.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, what the council had suggested is, or directed, is that scheduling of a special meeting that would be a workshop meeting to dialogue primarily with the business community regarding vagrancy issues. I did, based on the council's direction, consult with the Chamber of Commerce and to make sure that we'd be able to include notice of that meeting in their newsletter. Their newsletter goes out the first week in December, so consequently, I'm suggesting that the workshop meeting be held the evening of Thursday, December 10th. And the time of that start is obviously up to the council.
Okay. So I know this is under manager's reports and comments, and we usually don't take public comment on this. I do have a speaker request form, and I want to be courteous, so I just ask that whoever is speaking stay within the time frame. So I have a speaker request form from D. Torres.
Thank you. I didn't realize that you don't usually take public comment.
You could have actually made this during public communications. You could have been gone an hour,
know,
2 hours
it's
ago.
It's on the agenda, so I thought that's why I know. Okay. So just short and sweet. I will keep it short and sweet. I did give you you all have a little proposal that I've kind of put together, and that was based on a few things. First of all, the crisis here in River Beach and the surrounding cities, the county, the country, in regards to homelessness and our thirst and need for solutions. And I think it's imperative that we really start looking at solutions and we get kind of maybe go a little bit deeper and more thoughtful in our conversations regarding this very large problem that's affecting so many of us. So I kind of put this together. I put it together, I've been working my entire adult life with this population, so I'll start there. It's kind of been an evolving process, but I put this together based on a pilot program that we've done with Slow Housing Connection of taking $50,000 of pretty much unrestricted funds and seeing what we can do with it. You have the attachment there kind of shows you how many families we were able to house with $50,000 and individuals chronically homeless, how many we fed. You have that information there. So we're looking at that taught us a lot, that taught me a lot in regards to what is possible. So we put this proposal together for you tonight in regards to possible solutions. I'm hoping that you'll be able to maybe look this over, talk about it before your workshop, and it can start a thoughtful dialogue of possible solutions. I just wanted to let you know a couple things before I run out of time, that The pilot program is $100,000. It's meant to be a starting point. It's meant to be a combination of city and county and private donations. So if we ever got into a real conversation, I can expand on all of those things for you. This is just a brief kind of a LOI maybe. And the one thing also I want to caution you against, maybe it just kind of struck me, is calling the workshop a vagrancy workshop. Kind of highlights for me what's in my proposal, that maybe we need to really turn this dialogue around and start having some more thoughtful conversations and including the population, because I guarantee the population that I know that's at your train station and that's around your, you know, on your streets are not, don't fit the legal or the definition of vagrancy that I just looked up. And that is the legal definition of vagrancy is a criminal offense of being intentionally unemployed and thereby neglecting to maintain himself or his family. And a vagrant is a person who wanders about idly and has no permanent home or employment, a vagabond or a tramp. So many people, that might have been 20, 30 years ago. There's so many people here that are working, that are disabled, that are elderly, and that need to be included in the conversation. So if you see, the first thing we were looking at is starting a dialogue with those people and actually getting the information and listing who they are and why they're here and why they're in these situations so we can begin a process of helping them and us to relieve this homeless situation that affects everybody. So I'll just leave it at that.
Great. And so we'll do that. Is there anyone else that would like to address this topic? Okay. I see no one come forward. Let's come back to the topic. Bob had said he's suggesting December 10th, and the time is up to the council, correct? So anyone have any thoughts on time?
I'm open that evening, so 6 o'clock.
That was what I was going to suggest, just 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Okay. And
that works for me.
Okay, so we'll plan 2 hours. And so I think we've set that. I do want to say when we brought this up, we had talked about focusing on getting the business community involved and having a dialogue, and I want to stay true to that course because that's who has come to us and brought several things that require our attention, require some creative solutions, and we want to have that dialogue. But that by no means says we can't have another meeting and broaden the discussion. So I think my feeling is that we move forward. I think she has a good point about how we label it, and we should talk about that. And maybe city staff could find a different way to title this. But this is really aimed at the businesses on the Grand Avenue corridor and trying to address some of the concerns that they've brought up. But that doesn't mean we're turning our backs and talk about having a bigger dialogue or discussion, because I know one of the ideas I think I had floated out there involved housing it and identifying who these folks are and seeing if there is a way to help them. So I think that's I know that's where I'm at. I don't know where the rest of you are on this.
Absolutely.
I think that's a good approach. Yeah, when we had the first discussion, there is organizations such as Slow Housing Connection, that are servicing the populations, and obviously I think we want them to be involved in the discussion and the solutions. But it really was to hear the business community's concerns and how the city can partner with the business community, because the business community, obviously, they're living it on a day-to-day basis. But there is also some very individualized results or things that the businesses can do to, such as lighting their areas and stuff like that. That I know some folks have done. I know it's a partnership, I think the discussion with regards to where this starts was with the business community, but with the organizations involved as well. And I guess the next question I have is: do we do it here, or should we do it at Ramona? Do we do it somewhere outside of this location?
That was my next question, too. So we have December 10th, 6 to 8, and I would think, I don't know, do you guys want to do it at Ramona? Does Ramona seat more than the city council chambers, Bob? Mm-hmm.
Probably not that much more.
Probably not much more. The only thing I will, and the other question for the council that may be somewhat related to that is really whether or not you want the workshop to be televised. If you do, AGP does not work at Ramona. Just a point.
Okay.
And there could be other things scheduled there by now. Who knows?
That's true.
Yeah, with the holidays.
And so, it can be confusing.
Okay. So let's do it here, and maybe we can look at. We got a hand from AGP Video back there, Rand.
Set up Ramona if you guys want.
But can you Mayor, you can't broadcast.
Right.
So it wouldn't be a live broadcast, but it would be a taped broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay. So. I think
Ramona would be a, quote, friendlier, unintimidating atmosphere.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good point. So let's start with Ramona. If it's not available, then we'll have to come back here and we can set up the council chambers in a more informal fashion that promotes a dialogue and discussion. Okay. All right. So, Bob, you want to jump back up to 9 and we can go through your list?
As the council is aware, you've already set a special meeting for Monday, November 30th, to discuss primarily water issues. I'm suggesting that the council considers starting a bit early at 5:45 that evening with a closed session. That closed session is to receive a report from Mr. Avery regarding the recruitment of a new city manager.
Okay. So everyone okay with starting at 5:45 on Monday, November 30th?
Yes.
Okay.
Next item, Mr. Mayor, is a discussion regarding the scheduling of a workshop on the roles of elected officials during a local emergency. I know that this has been expressed as a priority for the council. Schedule is getting a little full between now and the first of the year. I might suggest that the council think about scheduling this for January rather than before the end of the year.
Okay, I think everyone is okay with that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All right. So do we want to talk about when to schedule that, or we'll have the discussion about scheduling it?
You could, if you would like.
I think we January is going to be 1 or 2 days, and Bob, I'll work with Bob to put it on a date because, coming back from the first of the year, we don't want to load the agenda too much, but if we can put it on there, but if not, then it'll be the second meeting in January.
Certainly.
Okay, so it wouldn't be a special meeting. Okay.
Good.
Right.
Okay. And then.
I didn't say special meeting.
Okay. That's where my brain went.
Sorry.
And then finally, just to give you a status report on the first quarter review and recommendations. Usually the first quarter financial report is to the council by this particular date. With the workload dealing with a couple of the projects we've been dealing with lately, the lodge, etc., I have been delayed in getting this to you. I've got it scheduled for next meeting. That's again why December 7th will be a bit heavy. I will tell you that from what I'm seeing, most of the funds are generally operating in terms of budget parameters originally provided. The only exception is to water, and we'll probably have to focus on that a bit more with that update.
Okay. Any questions of staff? Okay, seeing none, let's move on. Let's. How about council committee reports? Does anyone have anything they want to report tonight?
I do.
Okay, Mary.
We've been really busy over at HSOC. I was on the ad hoc committee to assess 11 or 12 continuum of care grants, and so this will total an ask of $1.2 million to the federal government, and most of it is grants we've had in the past. So we're likely to get them again, but we had to prioritize. One of them was a new grant, so we had to prioritize, and there were four people asking, so that one we had to prioritize the top four, and then it took us two meetings to get a quorum to approve it on an emergency basis. So we finally got it approved Friday. So hopefully those funds will be coming back from the federal government to our county. And the new push of the federal government is really working on housing the most vulnerable of the homeless. And that's where the concentration will be, and when the funding concentration goes one way, it's funny how the rest of the concentration tends to go that way too. So that's a good update. Good to know, I guess. The Housing Trust Fund, we just had a couple meetings by email because we've been reading the packet and just approving a couple small issues that are the projects, I think, remain confidential till they're out and about. Also, with Visit San Luis Obispo County, they had me give a bunch of fun facts about Grover Beach a couple weeks ago, and last week we were their featured tweet, and they tweeted about us every day. Not being a tweeter myself, I did not get them, but I know I need to. But yes, so we were their featured tweet of the week, and they did lots of cute facts about us.
Like so. That lisp you have.
So. it was a long list of cool things to do and see. And I guess that is all for committees. I'll have some communications.
Okay. Anyone else?
Minor later this week, so I'm
very good.
Thank you.
It's all I've had so far this month is the RAC meeting, which is a lot of discussion about technical matters and of water, and it's sort of everybody's spinning their wheels waiting to see what the weather develops over the winter.
Yeah, and I think the November 30th meeting, I think the meeting where we're having about talking about all the water, which will be a good opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. Jeff, you have anything?
Just two quick items on the Integrated Waste Management Authority. No new discussion on the franchise agreements, except for the fact that understanding that the cities are going to be dealing with that issue individually with regards to the organics waste and the food waste component. And then also, I believe there is four cities that are now in the process or moving towards a discussion on polystyrene bans. So San Luis has already passed an ordinance. I think it's ourselves are considering it. I think Pismo and Morro Bay as well. And then not technically a city committee, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is potentially pursuing office space via purchase of property in Grover Beach. It would be through use of some remaining CLAP road funds. It would be contingent upon that funding source, along with a number of other items that would be contingent upon the sale of the property before the coalition would consider obtaining office space within the city. So one of the discussions or the concerns that I've heard is that it would be turned into a service center. That was one of my specific discussions with the board, is that that would not be supportable by myself moving forward with that as a service center without either use permit approval or there'd be other discussion by the full council and the full community. So this would be a office space with opportunity for some of the partner agencies like the Link and the VA and some other groups that are that support the coalition to have offices.
Great. Okay. So for me, the Five Cities Fire Authority, I believe the meeting on Friday has been canceled due to a lack of agenda items. South County Sand District, I reported to you all last time that there is a meeting Wednesday night, and we continue to search for a general manager or district manager. So that's one of the topics we'll be discussing on Wednesday. Slow Cog. What I'm going to do is I'm going to invite Ron DeCarli or someone from his staff. We used to have them come in from time to time and give us an update, but we're going to make sure that they don't come and bring us depressing news. But one of the things that is being considered, I will kind of give you all just a little teaser, is the funds that Slow Cog is allocating is roughly about $6.3 million. We clearly the request for projects and their demand is significantly higher than the funds that we have available. So this board is now going to have to really talk about what are the priorities. One of those projects that are being discussed is, I'm sure we all, when we've driven 101 South and we've gotten to Avila Beach Drive and there's the climbing lane, one of the proposals is to finally go in and make that climbing lane an auxiliary lane, which means bringing it all the way up to Shell Beach or Spyglass Drive. That's right, bringing it up to Spyglass. The other component that they're suggesting is, you know, the Price Street off-ramp that comes out that's close to where Seacrest is? They're actually talking about reconfiguring those on and off-ramps. I'm actually making it line up with the driveway into Seacrest and actually putting in an on-ramp southbound at that location. Mm-hmm. So you would not have to go through Pismo to get onto the freeway. So those two components I think everyone can get behind. The third one is they're looking at a pilot project taking the shoulder. There's some additional width between the interior lane and the barrier and making that a lane that's available during peak hours. So that's a project that they've been talking about moving forward, and they need to have some additional funds to do the environmental work. Well, Briscoe Road in Arroyo Grande is another one that's being discussed as possibly a priority in South County. So we've got to talk about, do you do that project or Briscoe? And so I think Supervisor here had suggested that the South County reps meet and figure out what would be the top priority. So if you guys have any feedback on that, what you think might be the better priority, fixing the 101 in that location versus Briscoe Road, because I know that they've now blocked, I guess, the on and off ramps at Briscoe are not accessible because they're testing to see how traffic flows work. But I don't know the whole plan for Briscoe at this point.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Please, about the auxiliary lane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would that just be where the climbing lane is, or would it be an only going southbound?
So it would be only going southbound. So basically where you've got the Avila Beach Drive coming onto the freeway, they would extend that to Spyglass. But then they would go a little beyond Spyglass because they want to allow for a transition
right.
for folks getting on heading that way. So one of the concerns we have about that is, okay, that's fine, but if you are you going to create another situation
later on down the road?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So basically that's the concept that's being promoted by Caltrans at this point.
Oh, interesting. Thank you.
Okay. And then I will say the Bob had talked about this earlier, the JA for the Lodge going down to San Diego to meet with Pacifica on Friday. I will say what we're really hoping to accomplish is, one, to refine the construction schedule. Two, there has to be a financing schedule that is part of that. And that gets to the issue of, while we talked about potential funding in a financing plan, you're not going to need all that money at one time. And I know, Miriam, you kind of alluded to this a little bit. So there, you know, I think there's got to be a way for us to talk about the construction mm-hmm. schedule, trying to tighten up that schedule, but also identifying when payments need to be made and when and who is responsible at those times. So, you know, that's going to be a large part of what that meeting is about, is trying to refine these schedules and get some, you know, and have that conversation and provide information at the December 7th meeting. So I think that is on Friday at 1:30. So we plan on a two or three hour, maybe longer meeting. So. Nice. Anyway, that's all I've got. Any council communications?
I have.
Okay.
This kind of goes along with an HSOC update, but it's applies more to Grover Beach. At the last HSOC meeting, probably people saw in the paper that recently in Morro Bay, some kids got stuck with a needle when they were playing in the creek. And so now they're going to be cleaning out their creeks, which is, you know, similar to us trying to clean encampments. And one thing that Morro Bay is setting up along with the creek clearing and cleaning out is what's called a MASH, which I can't remember what it stands for, but it's going to be a lot like the Veterans Stand Down, where they have a ton of service providers come, and you can sign up for an ID card. You can, so whatever is available to people can be all in one place, so that before they are moved or relocated, if they are willing to accept help or get signed up for Medicaid or something, it would be there. And they just organized one up in North County in Paso, and they had a lot of success with it. They had 81 people come and sign up for different things. And one guy said, I've been meaning to do all this stuff. I got 10 things on my list done today. So there are people, and you know, it's not going to solve everything for everybody, but it would be great for us to consider doing something similar, since we are also trying to clear out encampments. Let's offer a one stop where people can get the help if they can get it and want it. So I talked to the chief about it. He thinks we can work on it and find a date and get some more plans fleshed out.
So sounds like something we need to put on an agenda and have a thorough discussion on,
or at least have that be part of the discussion on our workshop. So if, okay. But it sounds, yeah, more like an agenda discussion.
Well, we can, let's figure it out. And I know the city manager didn't mention this earlier, but I know that he has had some conversation with respect to the encampment down south of the train depot.
Yes.
Touch on that really quickly, Bob?
We're continuing to work to resolve that issue. A couple of things that have created difficulties for us. One was we did the initial posting, and I will say that we went through there with the human service folks initially. Then we posted the property and jointly posted the property. Property, by the way, is not ours at this point. It is belongs to the county and UP. Went through, did the sweep. The intention was to clean it up as soon afterwards as possible. And then we got a series of estimates on the cleanup, and they were very significant. And so I've gone back, had some discussions with the county. There's a possibility we may get the Honor Farm in to finish that cleanup. If we're successful in doing that, we'll have to go back and do another sweep and then fence the property. At least that's what the goal is.
Okay. And I've had a conversation with Sheriff Parkinson, and he basically confirmed that they are open to allowing, bringing in the Honor Farm to help with that cleanup. He actually felt that, I asked him if they could provide manpower to kind of give oversight. He was confident that it would just take two officers. So I hadn't had a chance to chat with either one of you to see if you felt comfortable with that. But I think that's something we should pursue.
Okay.
Okay. And then I think we'll maybe at the workshop, or we'll find an opportunity to talk more about what you brought up tonight.
Yeah. And I'll try to flesh it out a little bit more, too, and then I'll have more to tell you. I don't know if the workshop will be good, but it may be good to just let people know we're trying to do everything we can think of. I really am.
Mm-hmm.
Going along with that, I know all of us are kind of interested in this issue on different levels, and tomorrow there's going to be a meeting to discuss the South County Warming Center situation. It's tomorrow. Gotten different reports. Some people say it's at 2 o'clock. Some people say it's at 3 o'clock. Not sure what the confusion is. But if anyone wants to attend, it's going to be at Pilgrim Way. Let's see if I wrote it down. 207 Pilgrim Way tomorrow. I think it's a church or something. But, I've just heard conflicting stories about what's going on with the South County Warming Center, so I want to attend the meeting I don't even want to say because I don't know, but I want to go to the meeting and find out. So just wanted to let everyone know in case they want to attend. And then going along with the same issue, I've been thinking we were discussing it at a library board meeting, Barbara and I, just that there is still a lot of homeless activity around the library, and it's really impeding people from coming to the library sometimes, I think, and it's the volunteers sometimes are afraid to be there. And time again, people have just brought up, this area just needs to be, you know, safer and open, but when you leave an open vacuum, it's going to be filled. And I've discussed a little bit with the Parks and Rec Department, and I've just been thinking, let's fill that vacuum with something productive. If we could think about in our budget, maybe for the spring or summer, having free programs there in the pavilion and or in that lawn, and totally free, and maybe we're going to have to spend some money, but get people there and get it just the days the library is open, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday afternoons, and try to start getting people there on a regular basis. And we can brainstorm or not, but I don't know, just floating the idea.
Okay. So I'm just wondering if we want to give some direction to refer something like that to Park and Rec Commission and have them come up with some ideas that we could consider. What do you guys think? Okay. So at this point, I think we're done with communications. City Attorney, you have any reports or comments? Okay. Bob, on this closed session, since we do have this meeting with Pacifica,
there's no need in my mind unless the council thinks there's.
Oh, please. Yes.
So I think we have consensus that we don't need to have this closed session item. We'll put it on the agenda once we've concluded with the Friday meeting. And I didn't see anything else on closed session tonight.
If I could, it'll probably only take 5 minutes, a brief update on negotiations.
Are we able to do that?
If it's not, it's not.
I didn't see it on here.
Okay. No, it's not on here.
Nope. It's my miss.
Well, sorry.
You have to go.
All right.
We wish we could accommodate you.
It's 9:22, and we are adjourned. Wow.